It's a pleasure to be talking with Gail Gibson Hunt, the President and CEO of the National Alliance for Caregiving. Gail, can you tell me about the work of the National Alliance for Caregiving?
We're a coalition of about 45 national organizations that have come together around the issues of family caregiving, family meaning friends and neighbors as well as relatives, and across the lifespan. We're the people that do most of the national research around family caregiving. So we've got all the data on caregiving in the U.S., how many caregivers there are, and what's the impact on caregiver health and caregivers and work and financial impact and all of those kinds of things. We also have woven together in a virtual network the 90 state and local caregiving coalitions that exist around the country, and they have an annual meeting every year and quarterly conference calls and webinars on topics like fundraising and activities to do for Family Caregiver Month, November. We've also been involved in developing programs for like librarians or for occupational therapists or financial planners around caregiving. And then in May, we launched the International Alliance of Carer Organizations, which includes 9 countries. And we're in the process of setting up a communications a website and plan for the International Alliance.
One of the things you mentioned at the top of the interview was that the NAC is working on is something I'm also very interested in, is caregiving coalitions around the country. How does it affect the family caregiver in a state where there is a coalition, and what can they do to support it?
The coalitions are kind of like smaller versions of the alliance. So they're made up of organizations that are interested in supporting family caregivers. So maybe it'll be disease-specific groups like the Alzheimer's Association or the MS Society, or hospitals or home health agencies, groups like that, area agencies, sometimes government agencies are involved as well. They actually usually try to focus on state level, of course, or the local level, the city council, trying to be sure that there's legislation that gets passed that's favorable to family caregivers. And there are a couple of states where that's actually been successful. In Utah and Hawaii, their coalitions have been successful. In California, they were facing huge cuts to their state budget, and the Family Caregiver Coalition in Sacramento was able to see that those programs were not demolished totally. The caregiver resource centers that they have around the state. So they actually worked to try to develop a better relationship with the local government or the state legislature, and they also do activities like sometimes some of them have done assessments of the caregiver community. They'll try to get the word out online, for example, to try to do a survey of caregivers in Philadelphia. What do they need? What are their demographic characteristics, as an example? And then they are always thinking about caregiver awareness, both the awareness of the community, of the service that caregivers are providing, but caregivers themselves being aware of, you know, self-identifying so that they know that they're not alone and their services out there.
We've seen each other at so many conferences around the country over the past 2 decades. And one event I remember about 10 years ago, was the first international conference on family care that was hosted in the United States. And I was really impressed to learn what some other countries are doing to support their caregivers or carers. And you had mentioned that you just took part in the inaugural meeting of the International Alliance of Carer Organizations. What is it that we can learn from what's happening for family caregivers or carers abroad?
Well, they've been, particularly in the UK, Australia, and even New Zealand, which of course is very small, have been really focused on the caregiving issues since 1998, when in the UK they passed the Carers Recognition Act. And it was just at that point, just recognizing the service that caregivers provide and the value of it. There really wasn't any money attached. But since then, there's been legislation that actually provides stipends to family caregivers if they're going to be caring for a child with special needs or a spouse who is disabled. The caregiver or the family carer gets a stipend for the services that they're providing, in particular if they leave the workforce to care for the person. And they're actually also, if they do leave the workforce and then their services are no longer needed, the person, the caregiver, then can be can receive training to go back into the workforce so that they can, you know, maybe they've been out 2 or 3 years and now it's time to go back in, and they can avail themselves of training services that will help them re-enter the workforce. There are also other kinds of supports, assistive technology supports, where people can get their house fitted out with the grab bars, the wheelchair ramps, other kinds of assistive technology that they might need to be caregiving for someone. So we can really learn a lot from particularly those three countries. They're way ahead. Sweden is also a country that's done a lot around family caregiving, but their concept is that the government support comes first and is supplemented by the family, and it's different than I would say ours, which would be that the family is first to do the caregiving, and then it's supplemented by paid and or government supplied caregivers.
There are a lot of lessons to be learned. I think I remember that Israel actually gives paid time off for family caregiving.
Yeah, I think they do. I haven't, you know, they had an international aging conference in Prague like 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years ago. And they had a couple of people from Israel who came. They're very interested in technology as well as having paid leave. It was interesting. The Czech Republic, where the meeting was held, has a lot of people interested in not so much the government being able to support caregivers, but more, are there apps and that kind of internet technology that could help support family caregivers? So that's just another country that's exploring how to help caregivers.
There's even local innovations. Just recently, we were both at the National Area Agents and Aging Association Conference in Louisville, and you hosted a very nice award luncheon for the recipients of the Innovation in Caregiving Awards. I even love the name of that award. What are some of the most interesting innovations that you see happening for family caregivers around the nation?
Those awards were given to caregiver organizations that wanted to replicate one of the best practices that we had already given awards to before. And so they were, they got awards, for example, to implement, maybe take a website that was done for one specific group, and then in the case of ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, the Lou Gehrig's disease organization, one of the local organizations, wanted to develop training, to take training that had been, I think, for Alzheimer's caregivers, adapt it for ALS, and put it up on their website, and make it available really to all the ALS chapters around the country, and then ultimately make it available just broadly so that any group that was interested could go online and be able to use it as a caregiver training device. They got their seed grant, basically, from the Alliance to be able to do that, and MetLife Foundation. A lot of the other programs that were really creative were in how organizations reached out to different communities, and communities that maybe traditionally had not been that well served. So, for example, Laura Trejo in the LA Area Agency on Aging has done a lot of outreach to the Chinese community. And she actually was successful because that's not a community that traditionally views itself as we're doing caregiving. Very difficult. There are language issues, of course, but there are many cultural issues. And so she was, you know, really interested in getting some creative ways of reaching out to the Chinese community in LA. And we gave a grant to an organization that wanted to reach the Hmong community. And in the past, we had given out a very interesting grant to award to an area agency, a caregiver part of an area agency that was reaching out to the Amish community.
Wow.
And traditionally, they do not like to have people from the outside coming in, but they have a very strong tradition of family caregiving. And a lot of times there would be relatively young Amish women who would be caring for multiple older people, as well as their own kids. And they had no, when they were stressed or whatever, they had no release. They had nowhere to turn. So one of the women from this caregiving coalition reached out to the Amish community and was able to begin letting the caregivers know that, you know, they're not alone. There are resources. I'm happy to come and talk with you. And just as an interesting sidelight, she kept Amish-appropriate clothing in the trunk of her car so that whenever she would go into that community, she had long sleeve, black top, and a long skirt.
You know, I always say that caregiving is national in implication and local in application. So,
yep, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's really that's what you find. I mean, in Appalachia, we gave an award a couple of years ago to a group, and I think it's called something like Big Stone Gap, and they really were successful at reaching out to very isolated Appalachian caregivers, which again is not just a question of the caregiver not self-identifying. There are cultural issues. We don't accept outsiders. We don't accept public anything. You know, that's our tradition. And so overcoming those barriers and reaching out to those caregivers is really remarkable, I think. And the other thing that I'll just mention really quickly from the other countries that we've learned is about young caregivers.
Yes.
And we actually learned that there was such a group when there was an initial conference in London in 1998, which was the first international caregiving conference. And I went back subsequently and found out that they had a young caregiver conference, and I found out that in England they've been including questions about young caregivers in their census.
Oh.
So that they actually can go back now probably 10 years or maybe 20 years to see how many children there are who are really doing caregiving. And that inspired us to do this national study that we did on young caregivers back in 2006, and to know that there are lots of programs out there in Australia in particular, and the UK, lots of programs in the schools for young caregivers. We only have just a couple, and it's not an issue that's really been adequately that has not received adequate attention at all. I mean, there are a couple of people around the country who are interested, but it's not gotten the attention of Washington, for example.
I believe, and you know, we've written about that pretty extensively. I know Connie Siskowski down the almost
yep.
down the street from me, American Association of Caregiving Youth, and we gave her an award, and two tables of her young caregivers came and told their stories to traditional boomer generation caregivers, and there wasn't a dry eye in the room. So it was, I'm glad you're talking about that.
Yeah, well, I don't think we need to dwell on it because I know you've done lots of work on it. So, but I just thought, you know, the fact that that's where we really had the aha moment about
yeah.
those kids is when we went to London and saw that they had these kids. And then actually at the 2002, the international conference you're talking about in Washington,
mm-hmm.
We had a call before that asking, saying that the Australian government basically wanted to send a troop of young caregivers from Australia, and they wanted to meet up with some of the troops of U.S. young caregivers. And I said, we don't have any troops. And so they sent this troop anyway, and these kids had standing room only, where they acted out experiences as being young caregivers. One of the people who was there in standing room only session was Josefina Carbonell.
Wow.
Of the Administration on Aging, and she had some year-end money left, and she said, I think we need to have an idea of how many kids there are in the U.S. and what's happening to them. And so that's how we got the funding to do the study in 2006.
Gail, allow me to ask you the elevator question that I ask everybody. You get into the ground floor of an elevator with somebody you discover through conversations, a family caregiver. Now you only have about 30 seconds to a minute before you have to get off the elevator and potentially never see them again. What would the one most important piece of information be that you'd like to leave that caregiver with?
Gosh, there are lots of resources out there to help. If you're doing caregiving, you can turn to if you're caring for an older person, you can turn to the Elder Care Locator, which is online and has an 800 number. And they can hook you up with whatever the local resources are available in your community, or if you're a long-distance caregiver, in the community of the person that you're caring for. There are disease-specific groups that now focus quite a bit more on caregivers. So Parkinson's has some new areas where new attempts to focus on caregiving. MS has always done that. Alzheimer's has always done that. So there are disease-specific groups that you can turn to also. There are the ADRCs, the Aging and Disability Resource Centers, which are happy to help caregivers in planning for long-term care. That's the purpose, and it's for caregivers of any age. Caregivers caring for someone of any age, that's the disability part. So your local community probably has some resources for caregivers as well.